south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. A few shows ago, I spoke about how it was imperative that you go out and get yourself a brand new U.S. passport before those immigration bums get around to putting in a very high-tech RFID chip. And that new proposed chip is nothing like that super underachieving chip that's in our passports now. The new one that they're installing soon is one that can be read through walls and hundreds of feet away, not only when you go through border checks, but when you walk through Sears and Walmart too. No kidding. Not to mention, you'll be an open book for any hacker with $100 worth of electronic gear from Radio Shack. You remember when I talked about that a month or so ago? Well, guess what? I've got a really scary update for you, and I feel I just have to talk about it since two loyal listeners, Oscar and Mark, each sent me independently the same articles about the big changes that are happening right now with U.S. passport application forms. So let me read a few excerpts that'll shock you from economicpolicyjournal.com. Now, when you hear this, you're going to think it's totally unbelievable, but it's absolutely true. And it's all over the internet, on both legitimate and government websites. You get it? Legitimate and government websites? Anyway, what I'm about to read you now is bound to make you squirm in your chair. And the reason why I'm bringing this up right now is because it's very urgent that you hear this and act on it right away. If in the near future, or any time at all, you plan on expatting it down here to Latin America, 95% of you guys are going to come down here on your U.S. passport. So obviously, it must be current and in good standing, or you'll never make it through a first world border check. And notice I said first world border check. Yep, if you forget to cross a T or you don't dot an I, they'll nail you or at least hold you up at a first world border stop. But once you get to the third world, things change a bit. And if your papers and passport are somewhat close to being in order, but not quite, well, you've got that gringo advantage going for you. In fact, I've seen expats and gringos with expired U.S. passports pass through third world land border checks quite easily. Often the inspector doesn't even catch it. And when they do, sometimes they'll just say, "Sir, senor, do you know that your passport is out of date? Or expired or whatever?" Well, guess what? That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to hold you up at the border and lock you in a room to sweat it out like they will in the first world. Generally, they'll let you through anyway or just make you pay a little bribe, you know? That's provided they even catch it. But, as you surely know, if you're leaving the United States for any foreign destination, your papers and your passport will have to be in perfect order, or you'll never get out of the Denver or the Cleveland airport. And that's why this article should really concern you, so listen up. This is from Thursday, October 18th, 2012, entitled, "Why You Need a Passport Now." And under the title in parentheses it says, "Because soon, for many, it will be impossible to get one." So here's what the U.S. State Department is planning for future passport applicants. It says, the new U.S. passport application forms are back after they were pulled from circulation a few months ago due to the fact that they never went through the proper U.S. State Department approval process. But the new forms are back again, and they're worse than ever, even though they're technically illegal. Then the article goes on to say this: ignoring massive public opposition, and despite having recently admitted that it is already using the proposed forms illegally without approval, the State Department is trying once again to get approval for two new, nearly impossible to complete passport application forms that would, in effect, allow the State Department to deny you a passport simply by choosing to send you either or both of the new long forms, which have already proven to be nearly impossible for the average U.S. citizen to complete without violating the strict requirements of the agency by committing errors or omissions. And it goes on to say, early last year, the State Department proposed a new biographical questionnaire for all new passport applicants, which would have required anyone receiving this new long form called the DS-5513. Go ahead and look it up on the internet. Then you'll see just how impossible it is for anyone to fill the damn thing out completely. Anyway, that long form requires you to answer bizarre and intrusive personal questions about everything from whether you were circumcised, and if so, according to what religious ritual. Now, it's not April Fool's, and it's not a Monty Python sketch. I'm not making this stuff up. And you really gotta wonder, who are the perverts that put this thing together down at the State Department? I'm sure the Homeland Security and the TSA perverts had their hands in this one, too. Why? Because checking out your privates is one of their specialties. Just visit a U.S. airport sometime. And listen to what else that passport form wants to know about you. You're also required to give the dates and locations for all of your mother's pre- and postnatal medical appointments, which is absolutely nuts. I mean, who knows that stuff? And there's even more lunacy. Listen to this. You somehow have to dig up your parents' home address, where they lived 1 year before you were born. Yep, you heard right. Their address 1 year before you were born. On top of that, they've got a section that asks you to list every single address that you've ever lived at since you were born. And then they want your lifetime employment history too, including this, which is almost impossible to believe. They want the names and phone numbers of every single boss and supervisor you worked under for your entire job history. Now, tell me that doesn't sound like it came out of George Orwell's 1984. But there's more. After the State Department proposed that new form, it was pointed out by many public advocates that almost no one would be able to complete the proposed new form, no matter how much time and money they invested in research. I mean, suppose your parents are deceased, then how are you ever going to find out where they lived 1 year before you were born? The whole thing is a catch-22 because the State Department knows you're bound to screw up on some of the questions and or just leave some of them blank. And in that case, they can refuse to issue you a passport. And yes, folks, that's what it's all about. The truth is there are way too many disgruntled Americans toying with the idea of leaving permanently. Not to mention, there are already an estimated 10 million U.S. citizens or more living outside the good old U.S. of A. That's an awful lot of people who've chosen freedom over living under Uncle Sam's thumb. And the numbers are escalating because the natives are restless. The fact is, the U.S. State Department and the IRS can definitely see the writing on the wall. They know that U.S. citizens can only be taxed and controlled when they're living within the borders of the good old U.S. of A. So what's the easiest way to keep Americans in the country like nice little sheep to be sheared? You just make it really difficult to get a passport, and if you do get one, make it easy to block or revoke on short notice. Like, for example, if they wanted U.S. citizen John Doe to remain in the country for some reason or another, let's say, according to the government, his crime is that he's an outspoken libertarian radio talk show host, a kind of an expat agitator, you know? Well, suppose they wanted to clip his wings. All they'd have to do is dig back in his passport files, dig out his application, and look for errors. They're bound to find him. Then, by law, his passport could be automatically blocked or revoked. Now I ask you, what other dirty little tricks does Big Brother have up its sleeve? Already they're ramping up the attack on our freedom of movement. Can't you see that? It's beyond obvious. So what freedoms are they going to go after next? An even better question is, what freedoms do we have left? I mean, what freedoms do you have left? Lucky for me, I opted out a long time ago. I hope you're getting a good picture of what your government's doing to you. I hope it's sinking in. And there's no need to get angry. That won't help. You should just be making your silent plans to get your ducks in a row, too. That's the only smart thing to do. So this new very intrusive passport application form thing isn't going to go away. And it's going to get worse. So anyway, after some private civil litigation attorneys reviewed this new passport application, a big stink was made about it and it went viral on the internet. And did you notice how no big media news outlets reported on it at all? In fact, the only place you could find out about it was on the internet. Or if you went down and applied for a passport at the post office and they handed you the form. Anyway, a few months ago, after a few thousand citizen denunciations, the State Department withdrew the new forms and went back to the old ones. And for the last 3 months, until now, the State Department refused to make any comments on the status of those forms. And now we find out that during that time, the State Department was revising that passport application form again. Now you can look at the revised form, it's called DS-5513, as well as a new form called DS-5520. And if you look them up on the internet, you'll see they still contain many of those unwarranted, offensive, and impossible to answer questions. Now with the revised form, the State Department no longer wants you to tell the passport examiner about the circumstances of your circumcision, though I can vouch for most men when I say it definitely hurts. And since you're a newborn when they do it, you cry a lot. And for some of us more sensitive souls, even now, the thought of it makes us cry. And that's exactly what I would have written on my passport application had that question been posed. Okay, so someone in the State Department got their hands slapped and they eliminated that particularly outrageous and stupid question. But the new form still asks for the dates and locations of your mother's pre- and postnatal medical exams. Yeah, we all have that info at our fingertips, right? And how long she was hospitalized for your birth, and a complete list of everyone who was in the room when you were born. Come on, what planet are these guys from? And the new revised form no longer asks for all the addresses at which your parents lived before you were born. Instead, they want all the places you lived from birth until age 18. But there's more. I'm looking at form DS-5513 right now, and it says in section D, under the heading Schools, Daycare Centers, and Developmental Programs, list any schools, daycare centers, or developmental programs you attended from birth to age 18 in or outside of the United States. And in the column it says, list the city, state, country, and dates of attendance. You know, looking at this, I don't know if 1 in 100 people know the answers. But that's not all. In section E of the same form, DS-5513, it says, under the heading Residences, list all of your residences in and outside of the United States, starting with birth until age 18. And then in the columns it says, list the street, the city, the state, the country, and the dates you resided there. Talk about catch-22s. Since no one I know could possibly answer all those questions, I certainly can't. The U.S. State Department can deny the issuance of your passport. And even if you are issued one, if any department within the U.S. government, like for example, Homeland Security or the IRS, if they want to hold you up or block you from leaving the country for any reason, all they have to do is make a call to the U.S. State Department, look up your passport application form, and now the State Department can legally void or block your passport. Because if they want, they'll find some screw-up. I mean, what if you miss the range of dates you lived in a house back in the 1970s? And by the way, when they ask for dates like that, must you be accurate to the year, the month, the day, the hour? Yeah, right, the hour. How about the minute? Now that's one huge gaping catch-22 right there, isn't it? And after reviewing all this stuff, I just have one question. How in the hell did Obama get a passport? He can't even produce his original birth certificate, can he? Then again, I don't think I can find mine either. Bottom line, it's obvious that Big Brother has big plans for all you guys up in the States. Uncle Sam's just making it harder and harder for you to leave. Looks like soon enough you won't be able to leave at all. So again, this is a warning. Get yourself a brand new passport now before those new application forms are officially approved and it's too late. In fact, I heard for some it's actually too late already. In some passport offices, they're giving out that new application form already, even though it's not officially approved. So obviously, it's in the pipeline, and my advice, get off your dead ass and go to the nearest post office. And if they give you one of the two new forms that I mentioned, hightail it out of there and go to another passport office. Because I know for a fact that quite a few of the offices are using the old traditional forms. And you know what? There are tons of places you can apply for a passport in any city, small or large. All you do is you go to the State Department website, put in your zip code, and it'll search for the 10 closest passport offices. For example, I looked at my old Chicago zip code, 60611, and there are 10 places I can apply for a U.S. passport that are within 3 miles of that zip code. All post offices, of course, handle the forms, and a lot of government administration buildings. Anyway, I'm saying right now you're not stuck. Not all government offices have the new forms, but time is certainly running out. Okay, enough said about that. Now I'm going to hit on a popular Latin topic. Now, I must say, you expats and expat wannabes are really interested in real estate, whether it's buying, selling, renting, or building. And like I've mentioned in a few past shows, there are some mini real estate bubbles going on right now in some medium to large-sized Latin American cities off the tourist trail. And on the tourist trail, like Costa Rica and Panama, there are some really big real estate bubbles shaping up. And some of you have asked, well, if on the tourist trail, like in Costa Rica and Panama and Rio, and in those other Latin countries that have become quite expensive now, like Argentina and Chile, people are saying if they like those countries and they want to be on the gringo tourist trail for gringo camaraderie or whatever reason, why can't they just buy some vacant land, even if it is relatively expensive, and then take advantage of the really cheap labor and building costs that you see in every Latin American country, even in countries on the tourist trail? Because even though everything else might be first world expensive there, the cost of labor and materials are two things that are still very cheap. Well, at first glance, buying land and building a place yourself seems like a great idea. Because practically anywhere in Latin America, once you've got the land, the actual building costs are pretty predictable. For example, it's pretty easy to build first world style construction for $50 to $75 a square foot. That's off and on the gringo tourist trail. But only if you're contracting out the job yourself, and you don't hire a general contracting firm. In other words, you hire a very knowledgeable general foreman who basically runs the job for you. Or, like I said before, you hire a young architect right out of school, or just a couple years out of school, let him draw up your plans, and act as the general foreman himself. Then you'll be able to get a building for $50 to $75 a square foot. And by the way, you'll find a lot of young architects right out of school or just a few years out of school that don't have any architecture work at all. They're working here and there, but probably like at a building supply company or a cement company, not as an architect, but rather as a very overqualified clerk or manager at a tile supply company or something. The thing is, universities in every big Latin American city are pumping out way too many architects, as well as way too many business admin people, too many lawyers, too many history and geography teachers, and not nearly enough hard scientists, computer engineers, chemists, doctors, and engineers. It's the same story up in the States, too. Sure, it's bad for the country and very poor planning by the government, but it's very good for us expats, because these young architects are just dying for a commission. And a commission from a real-life gringo, that's like manna from heaven. So anyway, it sounds like a great idea on or off the tourist track to build your own place if you can do it for $50 to $75 a square foot. That means you could build a nice 2,000-square-foot house for $100,000 or a little more. And get exactly what you want because you've got an architect designing it from scratch. No cookie-cutter plans for $25 out of the back of Better Homes and Gardens. Unless, of course, you want cookie-cutter plans. Anyway, I talked a lot about that in previous shows, but what I'd like to point out now is that because of these mini real estate bubbles popping up everywhere, there are some tremendous deals coming online. All you have to do is keep your eyes open and be a little patient. And if you buy, you won't have to go through all that trouble and pain and agony of spending a whole year supervising and building a house. Because, you know, if you don't have the temperament for that sort of thing, it's a lot of stress. Have you ever built a house before? Then you know what I mean. That's one of the top five things that initiates a divorce. Turns out that up in the States, when a couple goes through the process of building a house, after 5 years, nearly half the couples aren't on speaking terms anymore. Anyway, before you take on a house building project, especially in the third world, there are a lot of angles to consider. There's nothing really tough about it. It's not brain surgery, but it has its moments and can be nerve-wracking. And remember, because of the rainy season, it always takes about a year. Now, listen to this. Before you get your hopes up thinking you're going to save a ton of money by building, I'm here to tell you the bubbles are starting to fray around the edges. In fact, just this week, I was looking at the Yellow Pages real estate ads in one of the big Latin American newspapers. In Guatemala City, to be precise, where there is a nice little real estate bubble brewing. Well, I'm here to tell you it's fraying around the edges, and here come the deals. Listen to this. I'm looking at the real estate insert that came with the Sunday paper. It's a 10-page, full-color glossy thing with all the big real estate agencies like Century 21 and REMAX and a handful of big local real estate companies and developers too. Down here, real estate is called bienes raíces and real estate agencies are called inmobiliarias. So look for those words when you're looking in the real estate ads. Anyway, they're always putting out pamphlets and Sunday inserts. And by the way, that shows you how much the third world's being penetrated by franchises. All throughout Latin America, Century 21, RE/MAX, and other first world real estate companies have landed. So anyway, the other day I was looking at one of these full-color real estate inserts, specifically RE/MAX, showing their houses and building and residential condos, mostly high-end stuff that common locals could never afford. In most of their ads, they're targeting the rich, the upper middle class, and gringos and expats. But here's what caught my eye and got me thinking that the bubble's about to blow. I knew the bubble had been expanding in the last 5 or 6 years, because all the signs and symptoms of a bubble are here. Anyway, so here's what caught my eye. I'm looking at a really nice first-class, first-world residential tower in a very nice section of town where RE/MAX has a number of 3-bath, 3-bedroom condos for sale, complete with custom kitchen cabinets and maid's quarters. Again with the maid's quarters. Gotta have it, right? All that in a 10-story residential complex that's got its own swimming pool and tennis court, a health club and workout room, and 2 covered parking spots for every condo owner. And I actually took a walk through that place a couple of months ago, and I'm thinking to myself, they're probably worth like $135,000. But RE/MAX has got them at $198,000. Okay, so it's overpriced, but what's so special about that? Well, listen to this. It just so happens I'm flipping through the newspaper to the yellow pages. That's where you see properties for sale by owner. Anyway, guess what? I see that someone's selling a 3-bedroom condo in that very same building for $186,000. Now you see, that's for sale by owner. And that's pretty common down here. People buy individual units for cash, people with money, and they don't live in them. They just wait for the building to get done. Then they immediately put the unit up for sale like this guy's doing. He probably bought in 2 years earlier, pre-construction, at $130,000 or $140,000. A lot of people down here with money do that as an investment scheme. So anyway, what you got is, in the same newspaper on the same day, you got RE/MAX selling a 3-bedroom for $198,000 and someone in a different part of the paper, an owner, selling an identical unit for $186,000. Okay, they're not that far apart, right? And you're probably thinking, the condo that's for sale by owner, well, he doesn't have to pay the realtor's fee. That way he can drop his price $12,000 and make the same profit. And by the way, down here throughout Latin America, the usual and customary real estate commission is 5%. And with the big agencies, that's hard and fast. But with small individual realtors and individual realtor groups, you can usually negotiate that down to 4% or less, depending how hungry they are. Anyway, so we got 2 condos in the same building for sale with a $12,000 spread. But here's where it gets real interesting. Guatemala City has 4 daily newspapers. Now, in one newspaper called the Siglo XXI, which means 21st century in English, they're pretty much noted for their classified ads. It usually has more ads than news, so it's a little lower class of people reading that rag. Anyway, that very same day I picked up a Siglo XXI, looked in the real estate classifieds, of which there are many, even low-class real estate crap located in places that expats wouldn't step foot in. Anyway, there's a mix of things in that paper. Ta-da! There in the ads is another 3-bedroom apartment in that very same building. Advertised by owner, of course, because the big real estate companies have their own publicity machine and they don't put ads in that paper. But here's the shocker. That brand new 3-bedroom apartment that RE/MAX had for $198,000, this owner is selling for $124,500. That's a savings of $75,000 over RE/MAX's price. So what conclusions can you make? You gotta know, this guy is desperate. He's gotta be in financial straits, because if he sells at $124,500, he'll be lucky to break even. But here's the thing. If you're an expat who studies the market a little bit, I mean, just read the paper like I do every day, and occasionally you'll find desperate sellers. What you do is you make that guy a cash offer, and I bet you can get it for 110 G's. You heard me, 110 G's. And that's a 1,500 square foot apartment. So what can you conclude from all this? Besides the fact that it looks like the bubble is fraying around the edges? Well, for one thing, based on this case study, it's much better to buy than to build now, isn't it? Because you're getting a nice, luxury, first world, brand new, guarded condo with all the amenities for about $65 a square foot. And the beauty of it is you save all the stress it takes when you build a place, and you save a year of your life. And you know, down here in these little mini bubbles I'm talking about, there's way too much supply and way too little demand. They're building all this high-end stuff. To us, it's not high-end, but to them it is. To us, it's middle-class, first-world style, or it's slightly better. But only about 5 to maybe 7% of the local population can afford that stuff here. So in many cities throughout Latin America, they're way overbuilt in that so-called high-end range, which means that's where all the bargains are going to be. And as you can see by this example, they're starting already. There's some really great lessons to learn from this. Number one, don't fool yourself into thinking you're going to get some kind of deal down here if you go on the internet and hook up with one of those big international real estate companies like Remax or Century 21. Oh, and sure, by all means, get online with them and review their properties and stuff. They have nice photos, you know. But don't deal with them. And don't think it's any better if you come down here and hook up with Remax and let them cart you around to all their properties. You'll pay way too much that way, too. My advice? Look in the paper for distressed owners. And better yet, look on the bulletin boards at the big grocery stores in the cities. People post things there all the time. Now that's where you can find some really great real estate deals. And usually you can tell by how professional or amateurish the ad is written. That's a clue as to how desperate the person is to sell. So again, to buy or build, that is the question. Well, you'll save a ton of money building, that's for sure, on or off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Then you get exactly what you want, and if you have a sharp eye, you'll get a first-world building in every way. But distressed owners are coming online all the time now, too. For example, a friend of mine bought a 1,000-square-foot, two-bedroom unit in a really nice residential complex. He paid $85,000 for it. It was very well built. Beautiful plaster and stone on the outside, together with excellent gardening with fountains and a beautiful sitting area. But the interior decoration in the condos themselves was horrid. That seems to be a common thread in a lot of these buildings, even the new high-end ones. The interior decorating, in a word, sucks. And often the building itself will be very solid and elegant. Beautiful tile and wood beams and real marble countertop. Then the bathrooms in the kitchen will have cheap, thin, stainless steel sinks that look like they came out of a Winnebago. And the water faucets and fixtures will be cheap, no-name brand stuff that'll leak within a year. And worse yet, the rooms will have arched ceilings with beautiful teak beams, yet the doors and the trim will be cheap composition board. Sorry, folks. Trailer court trim does not go with granite countertops, you know? Anyway, my friend bought one of these 1,000-square-foot units, and the first thing he did was he ripped out all the trim and doors and the kitchen cabinets, the cheap stainless steel sinks and faucets, too. And he had it all redone in rainforest hardwood and first-world plumbing fixtures. And it cost him an extra $4,000 or $5,000, but now his condo looks like an absolute showplace, a model home. Oh, and next time I'll tell you about the light fixtures.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.